Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the program, we'll be talking about consumer electronics, something that we do from time to time on the program. And generally, when we have done that in the past, we've had as our guest Rich Warren. He has been writing about consumer electronics, and here, primarily, what we're talking about is audio and video. He's been writing about these things for a long time. He writes for Sound and Vision magazine. He has a regular column that appears in the News Gazette newspaper. He has, in the past, written for the Chicago Tribune. And I'm sure that sometime soon we'll be having Rich back here on the show. This morning we're going to do the same thing, but maybe with a slightly different focus. And that is, I'm sure that we'll be spending a little bit more time this morning talking about computers and the role now that computers play as being a kind of a central clearinghouse for media in homes, or at least it seems that we're moving in that direction. And our guest for the program is Don Mayer. He is the founder and the CEO of Small Dog Electronics. It's a company that's located in Waitsfield, Vermont. It is one of the largest Apple resellers in the United States and is a dealer in Apple products. He started this company back in 1995, and when he started it, he was the only employee. He has, however, since grown quite a bit, and his business has gotten a number of awards. It received the Golden Torch Award from the Better Business Bureau, the Psychologically Healthy at Workplace Award from the American Psychological Association, Employer of the Year from the Vermont Women's Business and Professional Association, and also won an award as Business of the Year from the Central Vermont Development Corporation. He's President and Chair of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. He's a member of the Apple Reseller Advisory Council, and he's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Mr. Mayer, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us.
Glad to be here.
I certainly appreciate it. You had the opportunity to attend the most recent show, the big International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas? Yes?
I did.
I'm wondering, I'm not sure how, for how, over what sort of period of time you've been going to the show.
About almost 10 years.
10 years, okay.
On and off. Back in 2002, it was held at the same time as the Macworld show, so I wasn't able to go, and apparently next year that's going to happen again. But normally it's on the weekend preceding the Macworld show out in San Francisco. So I was able to attend both of those two major shows.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question I'm interested in is whether you can say something about how the show, the character of the show, maybe the kind of things that are there on display, how that has changed, or have things changed very much, say, over the last decade?
They've definitely changed. I think that the buzzword of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas was convergence. And I talked about that many years ago when I would tell customers and my employees that the lines between your computer, your television, your telephone, all are going to blur. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening now, where you find that devices that do many things are being introduced. So you have iPods in your car, you have iPods in your home, you have video on all kinds of devices, whether it's a DVD player in your vehicle or a handheld device that's capable of showing movies such as the Sony PlayStation Portable or the Apple Video iPod. You have a definite blurring of the lines. In communications, it gets even grayer, as you have devices that were introduced at the show for internet telephony, where instead of actually having a wired connection by the phone company and having a regular phone, you can communicate over the internet to almost anywhere in the world.
You know, it's interesting that this you talked about the fact that the buzzword was convergence. And I think that, as you point out, people have been talking about this for a while now. And I thought it was funny because, in fact, here I have an article that I pulled out of the New York Times about the show. And the author of the piece writes here in the article, "The theme of this year's show might be best described as convergence. This time we mean it." Which points to the fact that people have been talking about this convergence for a while now. And I guess that might leave some people sort of scratching their heads and say, well, yeah, people like you and people like this person and other people have been talking about this for a while. It does indeed seem that we're moving in that direction, but that it's been a little slow. Now, you think that we're actually at the point where this whole idea of convergence is likely to pick up momentum?
Oh, I definitely do. I think that if you look at you can just look at the new cars that are coming out now that have integrated GPS systems, music systems that are compatible with the iPod and other MP3 players, and some even with internet access all on a single screen in your vehicle, to see the convergence that multiple uses of the technology are going to occur in everyday life. Mm-hmm. You take a look at handheld devices, whether they're the BlackBerry or the Trio, where you have the ability not only to communicate via cell phone, but have internet and email access, and in some cases also have instant messaging and video and music capability. These are all things that are happening right now. I was amazed to see the products that are coming out that are all having to do with access to your digital lifestyle. And, you know, I guess at the CES show in Las Vegas, there was a major presence that was missing, but that was everywhere, and that was Apple. I'm a little bit prejudiced because I'm an Apple reseller, but it seemed to me that everywhere you looked, there was something that had to do with the iPod, whether it was the companies that were providing new and different iPod accessories, or whether it was video on all kinds of handheld devices. Both Yahoo and Google announced new video services that are going to be available not only for the iPod but for other video devices. So it was I think it's very real. It's the kind of products that you're going to see in your home, whether you're buying a new television that has the capability of easily connecting to your computer, or whether you're buying a new phone that has the capability of connecting to international communications over the internet via Skype.
Yeah. I was really struck by one of the articles here, several of them that I had taken a look at in trying to gear up to have this conversation, where apparently when Apple announced, they made a couple of announcements, and one of the things I definitely want to talk about is the Intel chips now going into the Apple computers. But the other thing that Jobs apparently said when he had made his big announcement about that was that during the first quarter of fiscal 2006, which actually ended in December and would have included the holiday period, that Apple sold 14 million iPods. And I'm sure that there, if you include the sales of other similar devices, small handheld portable MP3 players, that you're going to come up with an even bigger number than that. And it does certainly impress me, strike me, that we are, the popularity of these kinds of handheld devices that would allow you to listen to music, to, I suppose, watch a movie if you wanted, although it would be kind of small, to watch a television program, to make a telephone call. Now there are wireless handheld receivers that people can use to get satellite radio, that all of these various applications, putting them in iPods or devices like iPods, people being able to do email that way, people being able to do internet that way. That seems to be there seems to be certainly great appeal for these kind of devices. There are going to be more of them available. There are going to be more applications in smaller packages that you can hold in your hand, and it can do all of these various things.
I think that's absolutely true. And I think one of the things that you have to understand when you talk about iPods and similar devices is the very important connection to your personal computer, that these devices just normally just don't exist on their own, that it's an integrated system of software which manages the content on your iPod, whether it's music or podcasts or video or photographs, all are managed through an integration to other devices, electronic devices you may have in your home. And that's what I saw at the Consumer Electronics Show, was all kinds of different types of devices to make that portable device that you may use when you're jogging useful in other avenues, whether it's in your car or whether it's in your home stereo system. There was one very funny device that I saw at the Macworld show, which was actually a iPod docking station with speakers combination toilet paper roll.
Is this a product that we really need? No.
I don't know that we need it. And you know, I was asking the guy whether he was selling very many, and he said no.
Well, I guess what you get at, though, is the question that one may have an iPod or something like it, and that you can use for listening to music and other sorts of things, but somehow you've got to get the stuff in there that you want, and that so then you have to be able to somehow plug it into or interface it with either with a wire or possibly wireless, some other source for that kind of material. I guess that gets to the issue of that there was, and if I'm remembering this right, there was some kind of a joint deal between Apple and Motorola that they were trying to develop what would have essentially been a wireless kind of iPod that you would not need to plug into the computer to get the stuff in there. That wasn't very successful, I guess, and I'm not exactly sure why. Is that a possibility that they're going to come to the point where they're going to have a wireless iPod so that you can download that way music, video, you know, whatever it is that you're going to want to put in there?
Yes. I mean, I see no question that that's going to happen. I think that the first Motorola Rocker was probably not the right solution given the arrangements between Apple, Motorola, and Singular, which actually brought out that telephone. That if you let the price of that music climb too much over that 99 cents a song, it becomes a little prohibitive, and people are less likely to download it. So I think that I think what you're likely to see is new devices that act wireless to download music at the same price that people are paying from the various music sources like the iTunes Music Store. I think if you get that price up too high, people are saying, well, I think I'll just go buy that CD rather than download music over a wireless connection. Apple already has wireless streaming of music through their wireless network and the Airport Express base station, which allows you to take your music that may be resident on your computer and stream it wirelessly to your stereo system. And I think that's going to be extended even further. One of the sort of hidden announcements in the new products that came from Apple was the adoption of the new 802.11a protocol for wireless transmission, which is perhaps, you know, two or three times as fast as the 802.11b or 11g protocols, which will allow for wireless streaming of video in addition to music. So I think you're going to see a lot of action in the wireless space over the next year or so.
Was the Rocker the only device that combined a cell phone with an MP3 player, or were there others?
There were others that were not. In fact, you know, I think that when the deal apparently has fallen apart between Motorola and Apple, the second generation of this Rocker actually is using another resource rather than Apple's iTunes Store. So, yes, there are other MP3 services and systems out there.
Questions are welcome here. We got a couple people ready to go. Let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Don Mayer. He is the founder and CEO of Small Dog Electronics. That's in Waitsfield, Vermont. It's an Apple reseller, one of the biggest in the United States, as a matter of fact, and a company that has been around since 1995 and has received a number of awards as being a good company and a good place to work. You can find them on the web at smalldog.com. And questions here are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone in Chicago, and this is line number 4. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Mayer, I'm visually impaired, and I wanted to know if, and when you're at the Consumer Electronics Show, if you saw anything that would be specifically targeted for people with disabilities.
Well, I think that there are When you talk about computer technology specifically, I think that many of the manufacturers have adopted tools in order to allow greater access to the technology by the disabled, whether it's the ability to magnify the images on the screen or the ability to use the keyboard instead of the mouse.
Or maybe voice-activated talking software.
There has been both for the PC and the Mac for several years there have been voice commands and voice controls that seem to be getting better and better, both in terms of the microphones that they're using that are noise-canceling so that you don't have distractions from the surrounding environment, and in the accuracy at which it understands those commands.
Yeah,
in any case, you have to train those in order to have them recognize your voice properly.
Yeah, I think we're going to move toward that. I was interested in what you said about downloading of music. Do you think we'll see the day when, instead of charging 99 cents a song or whatever it is, that some company will come along and just charge a flat fee, like $25 or whatever it is, and they'll give some to the recording companies, and then you can download to your heart's content?
Well, there are currently subscription-based services out there which allow you to do that. You pay a monthly fee, and then you're allowed to download the music. Now, you don't own the music, however. You have to. You're basically renting the music at that point. And that's the difference between Apple service and most of the others, is that instead of buying the music with certain digital rights to it, in other words, you know, how many computers you can put on it, how many times you can burn it into a CD, that's Apple's point of view in terms of how people are going to buy music. Other services, such as Napster and the one that was tried on Yahoo, do provide for a monthly subscription, and then you have downloads from there.
Yeah, it seems to me like that would be the normal thing to do. I don't agree with the recording companies where they're suing customers. I think that's all you're going to do there is just alienate your base when you do that.
I think that's mostly publicity more than anything else. I think that I think the recording companies were reacting, or perhaps overreacting, to the plethora of illegal downloads that were present before there were legitimate services to actually buy the music on a legal basis. So
I think you're right. Just one more question, then I'll let someone else on. I've heard something about the Internet, too. I've heard that it's faster than what you have now, what we're having now, and I wondered why it isn't here yet.
Well, I think there are certain technological barriers. I think that I don't know that there's going to be a quick adoption of a new standard for the Internet. I think that you're more likely to see increased proliferation of both wireless and wired broadband so that it gets to more and more people. I think you're going to see the sort of end of modem dial-up type connections so that people have a faster Internet through broadband.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's talk with someone in Charleston. They're next, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, Don. I've got three questions. Number one is I've got several thousand pictures on my Dell computer, but I've been thinking about getting an Apple laptop, preferably one that's used, so I don't have to pay quite too much, to use as a media JPG raw file storage device. And I was wondering if there's any compatibility issues between between Apple's laptops and my Dell for image files like that.
No. I mean, all these files, as long as they're JPGs or other common file formats, are transferable between the both the Apple and the Dell. And
okay.
Basically, you would launch...
Getting on to the iPod, I understand that the iPod video player, you can use it for storing photographs on, as well as other things. And is there any incompatibility problems between it and, say, RAW files in particular?
No.
There is none?
No. I mean, you're in order to load files onto your iPod, photo files, you're going to need to use Apple's iPhoto software.
Right.
And when you do that, you're basically converting your RAW files into files that are compatible with that device, which are JPEGs.
Okay. The third question is this. I've got a pretty extensive investment in a stereo system, which I don't really want to make any major changes to. Is there a way of taking the music files that I have on my computer, loading it onto an iPod, and then having the iPod itself connect to the stereo system, and then be able to control it remotely?
Yes.
How's that work?
There are many ways to do that. Apple and several third parties sell basically docking stations that have a line out that will connect to your auxiliary input on your stereo. Other companies have remote controls, both wireless and wired, either Bluetooth or infrared, which allows you to control the iPod from a distance.
Okay, so it's like another remote control, but would have text or the files on it and so forth.
They haven't gotten as sophisticated as to have a remote that would actually have the currently playing song or your playlist on it. So it has some rudimentary controls, fast forward, skip track, things like that, control of volume, but it doesn't have video display at that point.
Okay.
I don't see that far off in the future, though.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, thanks for the call. It certainly seems to be the case that now more and more people are getting used to downloading music and storing it in a digital form in their computer, in their iPod, in some way like that. And what I find myself wondering is that up until now, the changes in format, particularly we had vinyl records and some people used tape, and then we had the audio CD. At least you've always got something you can hold in your hands. Now, it's possible that the players could become obsolete. It's possible that these formats could become damaged. We sort of know that. But somehow there's something reassuring about the fact that you can hold it in your hand. And I wonder, is there how consumer acceptance is going toward this idea of storing the music in a way that's invisible? You know, anybody who's worked with a computer has had the experience of losing something, pushing the wrong button, having a problem, and losing something. Is this really, I guess my question is this really this kind of storage of the information? If we go to a point where your music collection, your videos, your TV shows are all going to be stored on some kind of digital format, can we really rely on the stability of that format and not wake up one day and realize that this collection of music that we put together so painstakingly has somehow vanished overnight?
The short answer is yes. I think that a good friend of mine has a signature on his email that says, "May you have 1,000 backups and never need one." I think that's what people are going to have to learn, is that digital information is vulnerable to being lost by the mechanical device that stores it. I think that acceptance of digital content is very clear. Apple sold 14 million iPods in 90 days, and probably would have sold close to double that in number if they could have produced them. So I think the acceptance is certainly there, but I always would encourage everyone to back up their music so that they have it at least in two places, so that if they have a failure of their hard drive or storage device, that they have a backup.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that about this move to these kinds of digital storage formats and devices like the iPod, and I'm not meaning to particularly boost Apple, because there are other manufacturers of MP3 players, but that's sort of one that people know. I know people who are audiophiles have been down on this technology for a long time, and they might say, well, okay, if you're listening to pop music and you're listening with headphones while you're out jogging, you know, maybe that's okay. And if you're going to listen in your car, that's a big noise environment, maybe that's okay. But if you're listening at home and you have a good stereo system, you have good speakers, it's a critical listening environment, there's no way in the world that an MP3 is going to sound as good as an audio CD, for example. I have no really experience with using this for music. How does the sound quality, as far as you're concerned, how does the sound quality compare? And do you think that there are people who are giving up fidelity in exchange for convenience and portability?
You know, I'm no audiophile either. I mean, I enjoy my music, and I've got a ton of music, and I'm very satisfied with the quality of the MP3s. The digital sound is incredible. I mean, I know there are still people that go out and buy vinyl records because they feel that that is a more pure sound, and you know, I think that's great that they're, you know, that they're doing that. I think that if you look at a CD now, most CDs are having their information stored digitally anyway. So I think that as digital music, I think that MP3 is a high quality, good sounding means of providing that music that, unless you have a very, very critical ear, are going to be satisfying 99% of the people that are using that technology.
Mm. So you think that the day is going to come when, rather than having a big shelf full of CDs or vinyl, well, I don't know, the people that have vinyl will probably stick with their vinyl, but for everybody else who has a big shelf of CDs, and instead it's all going to be in their computer or it's going to be in some kind of little stick, flashcard, something like that, some kind of small digital storage medium that you could take and plug into whatever device you want to use to listen to.
I think that day is now. I think, you know, as the people I speak to, as we're selling iPods and iPod accessories, all have, you know, stopped buying CDs or are usually buying their music from the various sources that provide digital music. Or if they do have CDs, they're busy ripping those CDs into MP3 so they can store them digitally as well.
Hmm. Okay. Let's talk with somebody here in Champaign. It's line number two. Hello.
Thank you. For those of us who have been working on the MAT platform for some time, and myself who has invested in G5 Dual, I'm just curious as to what the significance of the changeover to the Intel chip is going to have, especially in terms of software and that sort of stuff, down the road. And is there going to, you know, be some point where you're going to feel like you really, you know, are losing to stick with the current chips?
Well, I mean, that's obviously a very important announcement by Apple that they have released some of their Intel machines ahead of schedule. The transition is something that we talked about a lot during our meetings in San Francisco. I think it's going to be difficult. I think that there's a lag in the software versus the hardware on the Intel side, that while some of the Apple software is going to be what they call native, will run on that Intel chip out of the box from the get-go, other professional applications like Final Cut Pro or third-party applications like Photoshop probably won't be ready for as much as 6 months. So there's plenty of room for people to continue to use the PowerPC G5s to do their production work while that software is straightened out. Later on, however, as we get towards the end of the year, the Intel platform is going to be even more persuasive as more and more applications become native, that Apple is using very, very fast chips and fast architecture. You're going to get performance that is far beyond what the G5 has been able to provide. The other obvious reason that Apple has gone with the Intel processor is simply that to assure themselves of a roadmap towards faster and more powerful processors as they go on down the line.
Well, and as far as software that you have now, is it going to be able to run decently on the new systems, or, you know, and vice versa, I guess?
Well, they're decently, obviously, is the key word. There is a translation software or an emulation software called Rosetta that ships with the operating system on the Intel platform. There is always a penalty when you run emulation software. And while this software is very, very good, I don't think if you're a professional running Photoshop or Final Cut Pro or some of the high-end applications that you're going to find the performance initially of a non-native piece of software on the Intel platform to be acceptable. I think that for the short term, you're going to want to continue to run that on the G5 PowerPC.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. Let me introduce again our guest this morning, Don Mayer. He's the founder and CEO of Small Dog Electronics. It is a small company. It's based in Waitsfield, Vermont, as they describe themselves. They're Apple specialist, one of the larger Apple resellers in the United States. They specialize in all things Macintosh, including Apple refurbished products. That's a company that he started in 1995, and at the time, he only had one employee, himself. Right now, I think you have about maybe two dozen, is that right?
About 26 right now.
Okay. And the company has won a number of awards, quite a bit of recognition, from diverse places, Fortune Small Business Magazine, Inc. Magazine, the Better Business Bureau, but also won award as a psychologically healthy workplace from the American Psychological Association, and the award of Employer of the Year. This was from the Vermont Women's Business and Professional Association. And if you have questions, we're talking a little bit about consumer electronics, particularly about computers, but also about the way that a lot of home entertainment media seem to be coming together. Convergence, as we said at the beginning, was the big word. And somehow or another involving computers, or at least digitizing the material. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Do you think that, again, this is another one of those questions that it seems to be about the direction we're going. Right now, a lot of people, as you said, are getting their music by downloading. It is becoming increasingly possible, I guess, to get also other things, television programs, movies, and so forth, by downloading. Are we on the verge of a complete change here, so that in the future that's the way people are going to get their media? It's one way or another, it's going to be downloaded?
I think so. I mean, you look at how many people are using TiVo right now, and that's, you know, that's basically downloading content and saving it onto a hard drive.
Right.
The same thing is happening with the Apple iTunes Store, where they're offering TV shows. I guess they just announced that they're offering some of the famous episodes from Saturday Night Live on there. This is basically the same device, except you're in control. You're going to decide what content you want to have and when you want to have it. I think that if you look at one of the more popular TV providers, DirecTV, they're also moving to a similar model where they're going to have a TiVo-like device that stores content, but then they're also going to have premium content that you're then going to be able to purchase that is already downloaded to your set-top box.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this goes, and I know certainly that traditional broadcasters, over-the-air broadcasters, are very concerned about this, and for good reason, because if the day comes when you can download your episode of Desperate Housewives, then you're going to ask yourself, why do I need a television? Why do I need the kind of television that we have now? Or why do I need the local ABC affiliate if I can just go right to DesperateHousewives.com and get the episode from them? It certainly, if you're in the broadcast business, it certainly gives one pause.
I think there's going to be changes. I think local broadcasters are going to have to take a critical look at what type of content they're providing. There's certainly going to be, for years, people that are watching first-run network TV on their TV over broadcast. But I think there's a lot of room here for some optimism on the local broadcasters to have local content, to have content in terms of news and community affairs that they don't necessarily pay attention to now.
Yeah. Well, that certainly would argue for doing that, because otherwise, why you have to have a reason for existing. And it seems that being a pipeline for programming produced someplace else is no longer going to be good enough reason to exist.
Well, there is a difference between paying $1.99 for an episode of Desperate Housewives and getting it for free when it's just broadcast.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone in Champaign here, line one. Hello.
Yeah, I have two questions. One actually is just a follow-up to what you were just saying. I mean, one of the real downsides of the Internet in general and of picking and choosing what you see and actually just going out and doing a search and saying, you know, I want lectures for X course and be able to have them right there, is that homogeneity is going to increase, cultural diversity will decrease. That's just that's just one observation. Then the other one is a cultural observation, too. I mean, question. I wanted to know what exactly the award was for a psychologically healthy workplace, and I'll listen.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about that?
Sure. Let me talk about cultural diversity a little bit first. You know, I think actually that the there's a fork in the road, and I think that greater access to broadband and to the internet and to resources that you can choose, both in terms of time and content, will provide a time freedom for people to get out in the community more, to look at new and different types of content that they wouldn't normally look at if they were just flipping through channels while they're sitting on their couch. So I think there's an opportunity for increased cultural diversity as opposed to decreased, but there is certainly a fork in the road. The Vermont and the National Psychological Association gives an award every year for the psychologically healthy workplace, and we won actually two awards, one from the state of Vermont's association, and then a year later we won the national award. And, you know, they come in and they interview our employees. They you know, talk to us about what we do. And we do a lot of things here, ranging from allowing our employees to bring their dogs to work to having fitness breaks and having a fitness club on premises to competitions. We have our annual bocce tournament every year where we allow our employees to go out and play a game of bocce against their fellow employees, and leads up to a tournament where we play other Vermont businesses. When my son and I started this business many years ago, we did it because we felt that if we were going to have a good job, we had to create it ourselves. And as we hired employees, we saw no reason for them not to have that same type of great work environment. So we spend a lot of time and a lot of money making sure that our work environment is acceptable to us and to our employees, and leads to a less stressful environment that I think also leads to healthier people.
Mm. Is the caller still there? Does that get at your question? Well, I hope it did, because I think he rang off. Let's go to Bloomington, Indiana for someone else. Line number four. Hello.
Hi. Your guest mentioned that Apple was switching to Intel processors. And I think he said they were switching to Intel processors to ensure that the their processors would keep up with the state of the art. If that's, I think that's about what you said, and there has been some talk that competitors to Intel, like Advanced Micro Devices, some other competitors, especially Advanced Micro Devices, are producing some breakthroughs which are threatening Intel's leadership. Do you think that is true, and do you think that possibly Apple, by going with Intel, might be missing that vote? That some of these competitors might make some breakthroughs that Apple will miss if they go with Intel.
Yes, I mean, you know, I think AMD and some of the other processor manufacturers have some very good chips to offer. I think that Apple had to make a decision as to which company they were going to throw their hat in with, and I think they chose Intel, which is the largest processor developer and manufacturer in the world. That doesn't mean that they can't adopt another chip later on if it provides compelling reasons to do so because of speed. One of the main reasons that moved Apple to the Intel platform had to do with the laptops and portable products, and that was that the fastest chip that was coming from IBM and Motorola generated too much heat. So they were very much constrained in making a very fast laptop, and I think that moved them faster to make the decision.
I see. In other words, it is true that Intel has been working on a processor that produces that operates with less heat. That they've been working on that for quite a while, and you're thinking that they've been somewhat successful.
Right. The MacBook Pro, which is the successor to the PowerBook in the Apple laptop line, uses the new Intel dual-core Centrino processor, and that is a very low power consumption processor with a very high speed capacity. So that's exactly the reason that Apple has chosen Intel for this particular application.
So you not only generate less heat, but your batteries last longer.
Presumably.
Okay.
Apple didn't really tell us how long that battery is going to last, other than it was going to be comparable to the existing one. I think that it'll generate less heat, it'll be faster, but they've also put on a brighter screen and some other bells and whistles that may also absorb some of that power.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Just as far as computers are concerned, we're going to see a continuation of the trend that we have seen now for some time, I gather, and that is more power in either smaller packages or more power in the same size package. So your laptop will be your new laptop will be more powerful than your old one. Your desktop will be more powerful than the one you had before.
I think that's true, and I think the other thing that you're seeing, especially on the Apple line, is again convergence of technologies. That, you know, computers are pretty fast these days compared to what they were 5 or 10 years ago, and many of the advancements do not have to do with the gigahertz speed of the processor. They have to do with what else will that computer do. And Apple introduced the iMac a couple months ago that had the built-in eyesight or video camera on it, and they now on their MacBook Pro have brought that onto the laptops as well. So I think you're going to see technological advances that provide other features and benefits to your computer than simply speed.
Hmm. How about user friendliness? I guess I'm thinking about not so much in computing, but if people are going to be starting to use their computers more as their media center, as a way of downloading audio, video, making various kind of copies, moving it around, using it in different sorts of ways. Perhaps now more people are going to certainly we know more people are using digital cameras and taking advantage of the fact that they can do some kind of a processing of the images themselves and then making their own prints. I imagine there are probably a lot of people who say, yeah, I'm ready to go. It's cool. Show me what it'll do. That's great. And that there are other people who might say, I feel intimidated by the technology, and I'm not really sure that this is something that I can manage to learn how to use. Is that something that manufacturers are concerned about and addressing, that is, trying to make the products as easy to use as possible?
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, aside from the Intel product announcements at Macworld, I think that one of the most significant announcements was Apple's new software suite, iLife 06, which provides new capabilities to demystify some of the technology. They introduced a new application called iWeb that allows you to create web pages in a snap, that'll allow you to produce your own blog. They have demystified podcasting through their GarageBand application by providing basically a all-in-a-box podcast studio that allows you to use your computer to generate podcasts. So I think that they're definitely, computer manufacturers are looking at the widespread adoption of a digital lifestyle and saying, how can I make that easier? What tools can I provide to the consumer to give them greater access to their digital media?
Hmm. Using more and more devices like this, it seems that particularly things that are wireless and that are designed to be used without being plugged in places a great burden on batteries. And I'm sure that for a lot of people that is an issue. It can get to be expensive. And there is also the issue of what do you do with the batteries when they're dead, which is something I know that you're particularly interested in. And that's something I want to get into, this whole problem of e-waste. I know is something that you're really interested in. Maybe we could just talk about battery life. What's new on that front?
Not a lot's new. I mean, batteries, battery technology in terms of current rechargeable batteries are either lithium-ion or lithium polymer batteries. The new MacBook Pro has a lithium polymer, which basically, rather than having various cells, allows it to be in almost any shape. Those batteries are improving in terms of the number of charge cycles that they will take before they have to be replaced. But, you know, that's a dilemma. I mean, it's the same dilemma you have in creating an electric car. that there's only a certain amount of efficiency that you gain by storing electricity in batteries, and that once those batteries are depleted and have gone through the number of charge cycles, the way a battery is measured in terms of its life capacity is how many times can it be discharged and recharged, and that's its charge cycle. Once that battery is depleted and is no longer good for charge and recharge, it needs to be properly recycled or disposed of so that you don't create a totally different problem of e-waste entering the environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, that gets us at a point where I definitely wanted to talk about. And as I said, I know this is something that you're interested in and concerned about, and that is with the way the technology turns over now as quickly as it does, we have an enormous amount of electronic devices that are either obsolete or simply outmoded, and that computers, for example, or other sorts of things. And I think that people are really predicting that once we get to the point where we really do change over to digital television and high definition, that there are going to be an awful lot of old television sets that people aren't going to want anymore, and that's just going to compound the problem that much further. What do we do about this?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, with the other, you know, big thing at the show was bigger and bigger LCDs and plasma TVs, and the prices of those are falling very rapidly. So, you know, this Christmas season, you saw a lot of people hauling away large screen TVs, and what they're doing then is displacing the old CRT picture tube TVs. And this has already happened in offices, replacing CRT monitors for your computer with LCD monitors. And this creates a very serious problem with the electronic waste, because the shielding that was necessary to prevent harmful radiation coming from those cathode ray tubes is lead. And that lead can end up in your landfill if you just take your TV and toss it in the garbage. So it needs to be properly recycled so that it can go to a plant that properly smelts and reclaims the lead for recycling and other products. Unfortunately, a lot of these TVs end up in overseas, and where the environmental controls are not as stringent as they are here in the States, and can have that lead and other harmful materials enter the water supply or otherwise contaminate the environment.
Well, that gets a something that, and you know, perhaps people have seen or heard about programs. The idea of the program is to take a technology which is, say, a computer, which is still good, is still functional, but it's no longer state of the art that someone doesn't want anymore. They say, "I want the newest one that will do the most things and the fastest." So then somebody says, "Well, I'll take your old computer and I will fix that up and make sure that it works, and then we'll provide that at low or no cost to somebody who can't afford a computer, and somewhere, you know, maybe in another country, maybe in this country." The problem is that it seems like some of those kinds of efforts actually just end up being dumping programs, and that now there are some developed countries that have tons and tons of old computers that they have no use for, that may indeed not be useful to anyone. And what we have done is we've simply moved the waste dump, and we've dumped it on somebody else. How do you know that if you give your computer to somebody, or if you sell your computer to somebody, that's not going to end up like that?
That's important that you understand, you know, how that product is going to be recycled. Some of the major retailers have entered into e-waste programs where they will properly recycle your products. We've done that here in Vermont, where we've become a drop-off location for electronic waste recycling, and we've made an arrangement with the company called EnviroCycle down in Massachusetts, that'll properly handle that product. But if you're just giving it to someone that says they're going to recycle it, it may end up on a barge floating off to a third world country where people without proper environmental protection are smashing the CRTs and trying to gain, reclaim metals that may have some value while the rest of it sits in a dump someplace. So you need to be aware of what's happening with your waste as you replace your technology. The added benefit of replacing your old CRT displays aside from just the lack of radiation and lead in the manufacturing process, is that the LCD displays and LCD televisions and plasma televisions are much more energy efficient. And as we enter into a post-oil economy, energy conservation has become more and more important.
Yeah. We'll see if we can get one more caller in here at least real quick. In Belgium, nearby, line number four. Hello.
Yes, to be quick. Wouldn't it seem like a logical thing to do that we just take and pile all these items up in one spot, huge spot, and then someday in the future, when it becomes very viable, we just mine these large dumps for all the reclaimable items that are in it?
You know, people are doing that. EnviroCycle, you know, is one. And one of the – I have a fellow up here that basically makes a truck route around Vermont picking up electronic waste. And when he came in and talked to me, he pulled this big slug of gold out of his pocket. And it was, you know, about the size of a half a dollar or so. And he says, yeah, this is what I mine from the electronic waste because there is gold in the contacts. And my smelting process allows me to take advantage of the precious metals that are in these products.
But also that, you know, the plastics could be in the future, not today, it wouldn't be profitable, but someday in the future when polymers are very dear and close, we could remine those too instead of just burning them up in the atmosphere. I mean, there's many aspects of this. If we thought a little bit more, we might be able to find a use for it. Though the use may not be today, the use may be tomorrow.
There are people thinking about that. Actually, the carpet under my feet now is basically old Coke bottles,
mm-hmm.
plastic Coke bottles that have been made into fibers. So, I mean, there are people doing that today, but I agree with you. I think that these materials that were all based upon petroleum are going to become near and dear as we go on to the future.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thanks. Well, we're coming down to the point here where we just got a minute or so left. What excites you most when you think about the future developments in these kind of technologies that we've been talking about? What excites you most, or is there something that maybe you can't do today that you expect to be able to do sometime in the future and get you very jazzed?
You know, I get most excited about using technology to improve the world around us, to enhance communication rather than present barriers, to allow greater access to knowledge all over the world. And I think that the advances in digital technology is going to provide a greater level of understanding. You know, as long as we use proper efforts to make sure that the information flow remains free, I think that that's tremendous benefit for our country and for cultural understanding around the world.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. Oh, and thank you very much, Mr. Mayer, for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Don Mayer, founder and CEO of Small Dog Electronics in Waitsfield, Vermont. It's an Apple specialist, one of the larger Apple resellers in the U.S. If you're interested in finding out about them, they have a website. It's smalldog.com. You can go and check them out.